Viking Motel, 1236 North Detroit Avenue, Eugene, Oregon, August 15th to 19th, 2011. My cousin Dennis asked me if I would consider officiating at his nuptial event, and I agreed and therefore needed to find a way to get myself ordained fast. Now, it occurred to me that officiating at weddings was a sideline, a moonlighting gig not at all dissimilar to my primary business line of motivational speaking. What kind of wedding-related oratory, after all, is not motivational at its core? Just about everything that comes out of your mouth in the nuptial theater inspires and transports. It seemed just and right that I should apply to the Infinite Love Church, which is one of those seminaries that ask of you only the $18 that will thereafter enable you to carry out the sacred rites associated with marriage. The Infinite Love Church requests that you read a few rather sugary pamphlets about their ecumenical views, and then they send you an email confirming that you are in law ordained, after which you're advised to contact the county clerk, wherever you are intending to serve, in order to ascertain that online ordination is practiced in that state. In this case, the affianced parties were Dennis and his bride-to-be Olga, of Ukrainian origin. Olga had been in this country since she was 7 and had no trace of an accent. She favored brightly colored athletic gear, a little on the baggy side, as though she were trying to hide a third breast. She had read a lot of Dostoevsky. I learned all of this at a meeting I had with Dennis and Olga, which seemed like something that I ought to do before conducting the ceremony. If you're officiating and you're trying to seem as though you're an intercessor, that the word of God speaks through you, then you had best meet with the parties concerned. Olga and Dennis came by the motel where I was staying while in town, the Viking Motel. About the women loitering in the parking lot, let me just say, that's just youth culture. It's a college town. And let me say, too, that Dennis did not deserve the long interval he served in the federal penitentiary for transporting copies of stolen material across state lines. And if anyone was capable of being rehabilitated in the penitentiary, it was Dennis, who met Olga while he was there. It was some kind of penitentiary romance, permitted and facilitated by Dennis's job in the prison library. Dennis was a trembly, nervous person with an island of hair on the front of his forehead, a sort of a saddle horn, if you will, with not much else anywhere around it. He was thin and hunched and resembled one of those dogs that you see in public squares in European countries. Dennis had not found a way to be comfortable in the world. He seemed as though he were habitually preparing himself for something awful, and this was justified as many awful things had happened to him. He said it was because he wore that necklace with the human tooth on it that his father had given him. At the Viking Motel, there was a sign on the front of the vinyl-sided cottage that served as reception, and that sign said, "Back later, see James in housekeeping." I never did see the sign removed. When James in housekeeping finally did turn up, after Olga and Dennis stood out in the parking lot watching women in detachable skirts marching past, he sheepishly admitted that he had blood he needed to wipe up. And the proprietor never appeared at all, which was why Dennis had trouble finding me, neither he nor Olga having sufficient funds for a cell phone. After I had drunk several bottles of beer or more, awaiting their appearance, this behavior, sometimes called a relapse in certain circles, staring at myself in a mirror on the wall by the bathroom that was so large I began to believe that I could walk into it. There was a knock at the door. Oh, mirror on the wall, who has the beginnings of an irremediable paniculus associated with middle age that no amount of dieting can affect? Who has more body hair than a bonobo? I was wearing only boxer shorts in purple when the knock came. The hip waders on the cabinet housing the television were for a planned fishing trip in the Cascades area, and I was unwilling to dislodge them to get the corduroys out of my drawer. I, therefore, donned the hip waders. I could see when I opened the door that Olga was surprised by the outfit, and I begged her to understand that I was an unsurpassed angler and had a suit at the green dry cleaner up the block, as well as a tie with a naked woman on the reverse side. Dennis knew me well enough not to be surprised, however, and soon the two of them were sitting on the bed somewhat uncomfortably. I poured them pop with some ice from the dispensary out by vending, and then sat in the lone chair by the window, still wearing the hip waders, which were not suspended properly on my shoulders. I asked them, first of all, if their resolve with regard to marriage was earnest and true and characterized by profundities of desire and mutual support. I told them that marriage, as I understood it during my own union, come to an end a couple of years before, was a sacred trust, and that many people married because they thought they were supposed to marry, or because society expected it of them, or because one of them was with child, or simply because they were bored and did not know what else to do with their lives. But I observed, it was possible to do better than this. It was possible to be changed by the revealing light of marriage. In proportion to one's development in marriage, in proportion to the amassing of age-related epiphanic moments, in the habit of love that is marriage, it was possible, I said, for the beloved to become more ravishing, more perfect, as when ascending into the concentric rings of paradise, and that in marriage we come to find the flaws of the beloved less irksome and instead more delightful and endearing, like that weird spitting noise that the beloved sometimes makes when hawking up reserves of toothpaste, or that tendency the beloved has to nervously scratch her ankle over and over again, or how about her wearing two pairs of socks all the time? However, as I was saying these things, I happened to look down and to notice that because of the odd layering of my own garment, that is to say, the boxer shorts and the hip waders, whose strap had fallen from one shoulder completely, resulting in a sort of bagging of the waiters on one side of me and a riding up of boxer shorts on the other. One portion of the intimate area of my own person was in fact bulging out of the side of my shorts, the sack portion of my private self. And while some men have modestly sized containers there, I was not one of these men. It was not unknown to me previously, the occasion of the pouch somehow becoming visible. It was an ongoing problem. And as indeed this was the case now, I quickly looked up, hoping that Olga and Dennis had not glimpsed the bit of me extruded from the shorts via the falling down and the bunching. Believe me when I say that it was one of those wardrobe malfunctions that only chance can bring about. If I could continuously maintain eye contact during the discussion, perhaps I could imperceptibly move the shorts a bit, or the waiters, through some kind of isometric hip exercise, so that a bit of fabric would flap over the testicle and its colony of white hairs. I was driven to ever greater heights of rhetorical fancy in order to assure myself that Olga, in particular, continued to make eye contact with me and did not look down. I smiled like a mad person. Any false move or attempt to excuse myself could easily draw her eyes that way. I began looking around the room myself in the hope that my darting eyes, alighting here on the extra large mirror, there on the stain on the stuccoed ceiling, would likewise seduce away her gaze. I asked Olga if the marital relations were satisfactory, if she could assure me that these relations were characterized by gentleness and intimacy and proper frequency. And there was a surging of in-breath from Olga, which at first I worried was because she had witnessed my little semi-bald protuberance with its four hairs fumbling for recognition. But in fact, I think that the in-breath was owing to the question being a probing and challenging one. And she thought for a while, and then she said that she believed that the intimate relations were intimate. And she said, as I recall it, "Dennis is a very sensitive man who loves the bodies of women, and I am lucky to have a man like Dennis." Then I asked Dennis if the relations were sufficient from his point of view, and he said, "In the time I was inside the penitentiary, I came to believe that I might never again touch the body of a woman, and so our love is a holy kind of thing." And here the two of them smiled at one another, bashful smiles of the confederates of love. Next, I asked them about money. I said that it was the lot of some people in the world never to figure out the money problem, and there was no shame in this, because love endured beyond money. And did each of them understand this? And was each willing to do the working part, the money-making part, if the other was unable physically or was for some other reason unemployed, whether because of felony conviction or ADHD? Olga opined that she had known poverty in Ukraine when it was under the control of the Soviets, and her father had for many years a job as a machinist in which he did nothing at all. He simply showed up at a certain dilapidated factory and then came home and spent what little he had on Latvian vodka. And she certainly hoped that the land of opportunity would have more monetary reward than that. But as long as Dennis loved her and took her to the movies twice per quarter, then it would be okay. After which Dennis said that he had seen the light about trying to make money by transporting stolen goods across state lines. And now he simply wanted to be, as he said, legit. And if that meant the loading dock, then the loading dock it was. And again, they looked at each other and smiled. In the middle of this smile, it occurred to me that I could simply swipe the ice container off the tiny lacquered side table by my chair and dash it to the floor. The ensuing mess would direct attention away from the testicle stretching itself languidly on plein air. And I could then rush into the bathroom and perhaps straighten myself up, or at least throw a thin, white, mildew-inflected towel over my midsection. This I did. And I'm sure the swiping motion, in which all the ice went flying toward the door, did not look terribly realistic. And you can only imagine how distressed Dennis and Olga must have been to think that the man officiating at their nuptial service was a hip waiters at night kind of guy. But there was not time to dwell on this because the ice was everywhere. And I got down on all fours and began trying to clean it up. And soon Olga was beside me. And I could smell her perfume, which she had probably put on just for this evening. In our shame, we were close together. She and I, we were investigators of shame, trying to make the most out of that moment. And maybe she never saw the testicle at all, nor the slight varicose vein at the bottom of the testicle that I had sometimes had occasion to look at. Maybe she hadn't seen it at all. And I do not know why this motel was called the Viking Motel. It leads one to wonder many things about Vikings. They did not last long on this continent because of starvation and disease. They quickly headed back to Iceland and Denmark in their spiritual devastation, where they could feud with one another and hack one another with axes named Head Splitter and Tree Foe. What the Vikings had to do with the Pacific Northwest, I cannot say, as it is my impression that no Viking ever visited there. Once Olga and I had cleaned up the ice and I had properly hiked up the hip waders, Dennis asked if everything was all right and if they should be going. I said that I wanted to say something, and what I said was this: look, here we are at the Viking Motel for this purpose, the purpose of the moment in which you begin your lives together. And I just want to tell you how much it means to me that you've asked me to do this. And I know my father, wherever he is now, and your father were not terribly close. And we didn't have that many opportunities when we were young to spend time together, especially because you live down south. And I know that you're in a time of need right now, and so I'm honored to be the fellow who helps you in your time of need. I have a lot of ideas about how to make this a special day, and I'd like to tell you about a few of my ideas, and I hope you can see that I make these suggestions out of love for you and out of reverence for the love that you have for each other. And despite my own situation, I make these suggestions out of appreciation and admiration for the state of holy matrimony. And then I suggested that maybe we should have some kind of group hug to indicate the seriousness of my purpose. And they consented to a group hug, though I had to gather Dennis in like he was a stray sheep and I the shepherd. But soon I could smell his perspiration and his clothes that clearly had never seen much bleach. And I held this couple close and said, "This is the warmth that all good people are looking for." And that was when Dennis began to edge away. I continued telling them that I'd been compiling a list of things that had been done to me in my own marriage that I thought were inadvisable, that no one should do to another person in marriage. But by that point, Dennis had his foot across the threshold of the Viking, and Olga stood beside him. And though I offered them a couple of stiff ones from a bottle of bus station rotgut, they declined. My feeling then was of forlornness, of the desperate inadequacies of this human linguistic apparatus that we employ to forestall a little longer aloneness, and of how futile these fumblings so often are. In the next lurch of solitude, I began trying to add to the list of things not to say to someone in your marriage. Don't ever use a pen while lying on the bed. Don't ever forget to put the cap on a pen after using the pen. Don't ever use a pen if it's new. Put items in the refrigerator at 90 degree angles. Do not throw things in the bathroom trash if there are already a lot of things in the trash. Don't ever lie on the bed, made or unmade, in your clothes. Don't get into the bed without having showered. Don't put your bag on the bed. Don't put your bag on the chair. Don't put your bag on the counter. Don't put your bag on the table. Don't ever do the laundry. Don't bite your nails. Don't put the toilet paper facing out. Don't put the toilet paper facing in. Don't accelerate quickly. Don't wear those colors together. Don't wear those colors together. Don't wear a stripe and a plaid. Don't wear that shirt. That looks bad on you. That looks bad on you. And that looks bad on you. And that looks bad on you. And that looks bad on you. Are you sure you want to wear that? That looks bad on you. Please stay out of the house one night a week. Please stay out of the house a couple of nights a week so I can have some privacy. Don't put that there. Don't put that there. That plastic cup was given to me by my grandmother. Don't use my towel. Don't use my bathroom. You don't understand your own family. You don't understand your own role in your own family. You don't understand what people think of you. You don't understand other people. You don't understand me. You don't understand yourself. I need money for clothes. I need money for credit cards. I need money for school. Don't cut your meat on that plate. That sound is awful. Cut your meat on the cutting board before putting it on your plate. Don't touch me. And when I was done with this list, which I wrote out on the bed with a pen that I didn't cap afterward, I slumped onto a proper spot on the floor of my room in the Viking Motel, and there I took up a close inspection of the carpet's dust, blood, seminal fluid, Ritz crackers, and insect parts to stars. Thank you.